Good afternoon. I'd like to call the Water Division to order. A quorum is present. First item on the agenda is approval of the minutes. Representative Sundin, would you like to move the approval of the minutes?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll move the minutes of Monday, March 9th.
March 9th or March 2nd?
Oh, excuse me, March 2nd.
Representative Sundin moves the approval of the minutes from Monday, March 2nd, 2020. Any corrections? Hearing none, all in favor of approving the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved. First bill that we have on the agenda today is House File 3943. It's a Representative Lippert bill, but he is tied up in committee right now, so Representative Brand will be presenting the bill. I will move that House File 3943 be recommended to be re-referred to the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Division. Representative Brand, to the bill, please.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Chair, members of the committee. I am not Representative Lippert, obviously, but I am happy to be the second author on the bill, and I think it's a really important bill as we talk about water in Minnesota. We talk about 21st century and 22nd century of Minnesota in terms of that water concept. So groundwater and water sustainability is really important. And I think what this bill will do is it will tackle some of that. It's based off of an emerging issue that you're hearing in headlines in the state of Minnesota, especially in Dakota County, this idea of a well to the Mount Simon Aquifer, in which 500 million gallons is being trained or shipped by train to southwestern United States, Utah, Arizona, and that sort of thing. And so this bill would actually kind of get at this question or concern that some of the folks in especially Dakota County have. It's an interesting challenge, because if we look towards the future, we look towards 2040 in Dakota County, there's going to be some population growth in places like Inver Grove Heights, Rosemount, and Apple Valley. And when that happens, there's going to be a water quantity issue that's going to happen just in that one county. But we also have 86 other counties, and there are other states, of course, too, that could be potential locations for this. And I think this is a good opportunity for us to have a conversation centered around what is water in Minnesota? What is the future of water in Minnesota? So that's essentially what this gets at. And so the Commissioner of Natural Resources will have to report to the chairs, the ranking minority members, in both the House and the Senate, about methods to ensure Minnesota's groundwater and surface water supplies are sustainable in the future. I also, just to bring this locally, we also use the Mount Simon Aquifer in the Mankato, North Mankato, St. Peter area where I represent. And a consultant in 2018 told my friends at the Mankato City Council and Mankato leadership that it would be an $18 million price tag for conserving the Mount Simon Aquifer. And so we're already talking about water conservation in that aquifer. And it's a large aquifer. It takes up, it starts around this area geographically and goes all the way down to southern Minnesota, the northern, northeastern part of Iowa, and then into Wisconsin and Illinois as well. And so we know the Mount Simon Aquifer is large, but we also know there are also a lot of other people that are using the Mount Simon Aquifer for commercial operations, industrial operations, and of course for residential operations as well. Cities and counties are relying on this for their source of water as well. And so that's essentially what this bill will do. And I do have someone that would wish to testify today. I don't know if you want to call that person down or I can. One of the two.
Certainly, Representative Brand. We have listed as testifier Mr. Jeff Broberg from the Minnesota Well Owners Organization. Please be seated. Once again, introduce yourself and who you're with, and then please start your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Jeff Broberg. I'm a licensed professional geologist. I'm now retired from corporate life, and I run a nonprofit organization, the Minnesota Well Owners Organization, trying to assure safe water for everybody that has a safe well. And I'll keep it brief today. I'm in favor of working out the issues that are so important to Minnesota, and there's really four. Water for future generations. We need to really concentrate on how we protect water for our future generations. And The Mount Simon Protection Bill in the Twin Cities is an example of how we do that. The public interest and public impact is the second thing. And how does the public understand that their water supply is being impacted by large volume users? Groundwater quality and quantity both tied together. We know many instances where high volume water withdrawal can bring in contaminants from shallower areas or other zones. And the prioritization of the use of water for Minnesota residents. And we have in law already some aspects to that. So I just want to say as this moves forward, that we be cognizant of those issues. I think there are studies already that the DNR has done that point to those. But if we can provide clarity to those four issues, I think we really advance the ball. Thank you.
You're welcome. Any questions for the testifier? Hearing none, I do understand that we have somebody from the DNR, Mr. Jason Meckel. If you'd like to come down, identify yourself and who you're with, and start your presentation, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Jason Meckel, Department of Natural Resources. Just wanted to speak to a number of things that Mr. Broberg just talked about, which is that we have done several reports about groundwater sustainability and thresholds for use, and we think that we can pull that information together fairly quickly. What we would do, what we anticipate doing, is to use this time for this proposed study to look at the out-of-state transfer questions, in particular some of the interstate commerce questions, as well as any existing uses that we currently have that involve any water that's transferred out of the state. We think those are important things to understand before we would jump too far into an actual recommended statutory change.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Meckel. Are there any questions for Mr. Meckel? Hearing none, does anyone have any questions for the bill presenter? Is there anyone else in the audience who'd like to testify for or against the bill? Hearing none, Representative Brand, are there any closing comments you'd like to make?
Closing comments, I would just say that, you know, in the future we might be not talking about usage more frequently. We might be talking about scarcity of water, especially in other places in this country. I remember that back in the day when we had President Bush, the second one, he had talked about piping water from the Great Lakes down to the Southwest. And so this isn't a new idea. But I think that we have to have a conversation about what our water future looks like. I sit on the Agriculture Committee, and so I'm not immune to the fact that we have issues relating to water, water conservation, water access when we talk about irrigation and things like that as well. I want to make sure that we're having this conversation, and I think this is the appropriate time to do it. So I really look forward to advancing the bill and working together with you all to get that done.
Thank you, Representative Brand. I will renew my motion that House File 3943 be recommended to be referred to the Environment and Natural Resource Finance Division. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion is approved. Next item we have on the agenda is House File 3950. Well, disclosure requirements provided. Once again, Representative Lippert isn't able to be here, but Representative Brand is happy to present the bill. Representative Brand, I will move that House File 3950 be recommended to be re-referred to the Commerce Committee. Representative Brand, to the bill, please.
Chair members, thanks very much for allowing me to talk about House File 3950 as well this afternoon. So in Minnesota, we already have a well disclosure and a well mapped disclosure that we offer folks when they purchase a home or sell a home to complete. Now, as a former realtor, so 2009 to 2014, I was a realtor in Mankato, and I remember having to deal with these well disclosures a lot in rural parts of Minnesota especially. And you know, I mean, there are different things about, you map out where your wells are located. You talk about whether or not there was a history of contaminants, methamphetamines, all that stuff is in the disclosure. Actually, I have the disclosure now. With between the map and the actual disclosure statement, it's four pages. The disclosure itself has line 47 says other well information, date well water last tested for contaminants, test results attached, yes or no. Line 49, contaminated well. Is there a well on the property contaminated or containing contaminated water, yes or no? And then 50 through 56 are lines where the sellers of the home can actually write down what might be the case. And I think this legislation, all it does is amends current statute with line number 1.15 through 1.17 for each well that provides potable water to the real property. The results of a water analysis for bacteria, nitrates, and arsenic conducted by a laboratory certified under section 144.98 within the previous 6 months. So if there was a well and the well tested in the last 6 months, it would be to provide that information along with other documents that are already required as part of this disclosure to this potential buyer of the property. And so that's essentially what this bill will do. Instead of talking about contaminated water, now we're talking specifically about bacteria, nitrates, and arsenic. All very important things to know when you purchase a home. As a former realtor, I could definitely tell you that I did recommend people get the wells tested before they purchase them. But we know a lot of people from the Legislative Water Commission, the subcommittee rather, that a lot of people don't get it tested. We know that people should test it when they buy the house. We know that they should have tested when they have a baby and bring the baby home. The doctor obviously also makes recommendations once in a while. They usually make a recommendation that the if a woman is pregnant, that they have the well tested then as well. And so there are different phases in life where people should have their wells tested. Unfortunately, the majority of them don't. A lot of people look at their water and say the water's clear, so it must be fine, not knowing that there's actually things in there that are odorless and tasteless that we know are in there, including things like bacteria, including things like nitrates and arsenic. So I think this, what this attempts to do is to really kind of clarify this stuff from a consumer standpoint. And I think as a consumer protection state like Minnesota, I think this is a fine conversation to have right now about what we can do in the future for consumer protection in Minnesota.
Representative Haley, do you have a question?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Haley, go ahead.
Representative Brand, thank you for the bill. I just have a few questions. What is the average cost that a homeowner would incur to have their well tested?
Representative Brand.
That question is a little bit beyond my scope and reach. I don't have that at the top of my head. We did talk about it at the Legislative Water Subcommittee. I can't remember, though. I want to say it's a few hundred dollars. Is it $300? Maybe I'll turn it over to you, Chair. Maybe you would have an idea.
What I can thank you, Representative Brand. I know that when my folks' parents had their well tested, it was $20 to get the well tested for the arsenic, the bacteria, and the nitrate. So from what we were seeing there, it was not a significant cost. Now I don't know, you know, how that applies in the rest of the state.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. Representative
Haley. Can I ask a follow-up question? Thank you. You mentioned different points in you know, somebody living in a home when they should also test the well. New baby coming every certain number of years. Is there any other public awareness campaign around those recommendations so that everybody's well, you know, wells are being tested, not just when an event like the sale of a home is happening?
Representative Brand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Haley. That's a really good question. I think that the Department of Health does require some bacteria testing when a well is put in. But beyond that, that's really up to the owner of the well to take care of. Just like if you live in a city, that's taken care of by your public works staff. And I know that specifically in my area, we have a high amount of nitrates in the St. Peter area. And we have to blend our water, reverse osmosis our water. It's a pretty extensive scheme that we have in order to get clean water to our consumers. And I would imagine that if you live on a farm like I did growing up as a kid, well, frankly, my parents never got their well tested. And now I think the emerging discussion is you should, and here's how, and here's who to even go with. I don't know of any campaigns that are going on right now. Maybe the Department of Health has something. Maybe I could defer to somebody that might have something like House Research. Do you know of anything either?
Ms. Taylor?
Mr. Chair, members, I'm not aware of any, like, statewide. Okay. There may be specific cases when there's issues in an area, but I'm not aware of any statewide public campaigns.
All right. Representative Brand, anything else?
So perhaps something we should address as well. I'm happy to work with you.
Thank you, Representative Mr. Chair. Just a follow-up comment.
Go right ahead, Representative.
Thank you. I appreciate you bringing the bill forward. Water quality is important to all of us. I happen to have a well myself. Mm-hmm. So just a couple comments that sometimes we have competing objectives in the legislature, and I serve on a housing commission, and Chair Fisher is part of that as well. And we're trying to, you know, address the cost of housing in the state of Minnesota and what regulations and fees are part of that equation and why our housing costs are so great. So I would like clarification if you can look into specific costs for a homeowner on this so we understand we're adding something else to that part of the equation. And again, just stating this is important for all homes, all well owners. So if there's, you know, another way we can address this rather than just when a house is being sold. Appreciate your indulgence, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome, and Representative Haley, and thanks for mentioning it. And I think in terms of the next stop for this will be the Commerce Committee. I think that's a great place where that further discussion on the cost and some of those things can help happen at that point in time. So that's a great suggestion. Thank you.
Thank you.
We've got all sorts of fingers going up. I think Representative Heintzman beat you out there, Representative Torkelson. So.
Thank you,
go.
Mr. Chair. I am looking at some of the bill language here, and I was wondering, Representative, why not include lead as another contaminant of concern in this list?
Representative Brand.
Mr. Chair and Representative Heintzman, I can't speak to that. I know that this comes out of our legislative subcommittee. This was a bill that we had proposed, I believe. And so, you know, as a group, we had that conversation already. I don't think there would be a rational reason not to include it. But as the subcommittee, we were focused on things like arsenic and nitrates, especially. And so definitely could be included, something to bring forth for the next committee, possibly an amendment as well.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Brand, for bringing this bill forward. I am on this bill, but I've been having some buyer's remorse, I guess, Mr. Chair, for lack of a better term. You know, mandates are a problem in many industries, and including the realty industry. I'm sure we're going to hear more about this from the testifiers. But I'm thinking more along the lines of perhaps including information at the time that dwellings or properties change hands that make sure people know that tests are available rather than a mandate. There's a potential, and we'll hear about some of these issues, I think, of slowing down transactions, adding costs unnecessarily, and just kind of expressing my feelings at the moment, Mr. Chair.
I appreciate hearing that. Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Representative Brand.
I guess just a couple of comments on that. People know that now that testing is an option, and they don't. And we know that these well disclosures already exist because I have a physical copy of that in my hand now. All we're doing now is clarifying that line 47 to 56, talking about contaminated water, and now actually bringing things like nitrates and arsenic into the conversation, possibly lead as well. And so I think, you know, we already have in this lined out specifically methamphetamine production area, and that can go back into the past, obviously, as well. But I think this is something that's justifiable, and I think it's something that we should do. Okay. This is the time to do it.
All right. Very good. Thank you, Representative Brand. If there's no further questions, we do have several testifiers here. Once again, we'll start with our first testifier, Mr. Jeff Broberg. If you'd like to come down, introduce yourself again and who you're with, and start your testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Once again, I'm Jeff Broberg. I'm a licensed professional geologist at the Minnesota Well Owners Organization. I'm going to start with a story. For 30 years, I was an environmental risk consultant. And a number of years ago, I was engaged by a homeowner who had bought a well that the problems with the well had not been disclosed. It related to a dye trace test in the Olmsted County landfill, where they put dye in the well, and it showed up in the people's, or they put dye in the landfill, and it showed up in people's wells.
The realtor was aware, the homeowner was aware, and it was never disclosed to the buyer until such time that the county came back and said, "What do you? Can we help you put treatment on your well?" My client sued, and the realtor had to buy the house and make the proper disclosures to the people who had been defrauded in this instance. I think the theme of this really goes back to the report that you heard from the health department last week from the future of drinking water. No surprises. We really want to avoid surprises with water issues, whether they're withdrawals or the quality of the water in your well. And the best way to do that, and the foundation of that, is testing your water. Unfortunately, we don't have a community norm right now for testing water. And the work that I've done at MinWu, we've really been investigating the barriers and the motivators to this. And what we find is the barriers far outweigh the motivators. People are afraid of disclosure. They're afraid of the cost. They don't want government interference. We put on free nitrate testing clinics, and at every one of them, a half a dozen people said, "You're not going to report me to the government, are you? You're not going to close my well, are you?" And our only concern is their water quality at their kitchen sink. That's all we care about, is that they have safe water to drink from. So we assure them that that's not the purpose, and they settle down and consent to the test, and some of them we move on, and they need more testing or water treatment. But we take away the fear by explaining to people the inexpensive treatment options that occur. Point of use treatment options. I think there was a question about the testing and the treatment options. In Olmsted County right now, a test for these compounds, arsenic, bacteria, nitrates, is about $48. You can add lead for another $15. So under $60, you can have a test that tells you what is available. For $300 to $500, you can put a point-of-use treatment system under your sink and make sure that you have safe drinking water from all of those compounds. Avoiding that surprise at a property sale, I think, is a critical element. And it protects the seller from a buyer perhaps backing out or making a claim. It affects a realtor who might have been told they should have known. And it protects the buyer with their health, safety, welfare, and the cost for future systems. But we do need to address these barriers and motivators. I started to look at what the scale of this is, and it looks to me from the number of property sales in Minnesota, it's kind of in the average of 85,000 property sales a year. About 20% of those are rural properties, so we're talking about 20,000 tests a year. We have the testing capacity. There's 30 certified water labs across Minnesota that can do the work. Many county health departments do this at reduced costs or even programs. I know Dakota County has recently done some free lead testing, and occasionally they have money for other counties do this. So the key is assuring safe water and not being surprised. And a disclosure, a test beforehand, and a disclosure of that goes a long ways. The health department now, really, their recommendation is you should test for bacteria once a year. You should test for nitrates every other year. You should test for arsenic once. You should test for lead once. You should test for manganese once. Those are the standard recommendations, but the polls that have been done across the state find that it's far short of that. On average, people report testing once every 10 years at the sale of their property or with a pregnancy in the home. That's not frequent enough to protect all the households. As a final note, we ask people about their well construction. And one of the things we find is, we had a well testing clinic in Wadena 2 weeks ago. 80% of those people do not have wells that were modern wells. They were drilled before the well code. 90% of those people had excellent water. they had nothing to fear about. And the things that we really want to promote is if you have good water, be grateful and figure out the ways to protect it. If you don't have safe water, take the simple steps to treat your water and to make sure that your household, your health is protected and your property value is protected by saying that you have that treatment. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, Mr. Broberg. Any questions for the testifier? Hearing none, thank you, Mr. Broberg. Next we have Mr. Matt Spellman from the Minnesota Realtors. If you'd like to come forward, introduce yourself again, where you're from, and begin your testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Matt Spellman. I'm here representing Minnesota Realtors. Minnesota Realtors is a professional trade association with over 20,000 licensed real estate agents that engage in all aspects of the transaction every day. Our members work with property owners and aspiring property owners every day, and that's why I'm here today to share some of our concerns with House File 3950. But before I do, I would like to emphasize, Mr. Chair, that Minnesota Realtors supports clean and safe drinking water for all Minnesotans. Our members also believe that all environmental issues, including drinking water protections, should be addressed on a comprehensive statewide basis, which leads me to some of my concerns with House File 3950. This bill only requires well testing upon property transfer. Waiting until property transfer before addressing the safety of drinking water will not result in adequate protection for all Minnesotans. This bill will not result in more testing for private wells of people who never move. Furthermore, our members have long been opposed to enforcing mandates, especially unfunded ones, on the transaction, which this bill does. I would like to thank Representative Brand, who is presenting this bill today. We had a chance to meet earlier, and he allowed me to share our concerns with this bill. And I'd like to thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing me to testify here today, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
You're welcome. Any questions for the testifier? I do have one question regarding some of the different forms of lending that are available out there, like federal loans, VHA loans, et cetera. Do any of those require where you have private wells to have any of those tested before they finalize their financing agreements to the testifier?
Mr. Chair, thank you for the question. You know, I don't actually know the answer to that. I'm happy to follow up with you on that.
I would appreciate it. If you could let me know, I would appreciate it. Thank you. Any other questions? Hearing none, thank you, sir. And then next, is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify for or against this bill? Looks like we have somebody coming down. If you'd like to introduce yourself and who you're with, and then please start your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm Bob Tamman from Sudan, Minnesota, and very kind of you to offer the public a chance to testify. And I might be going off on a little bit of a tangent here, but as I listened to the testimony today, I was thinking about what we have up north in mining country. We have a lot of exploratory drilling. And if I'm remembering correctly, people that do exploratory drilling have 10 years to properly, professionally cap that well. And I suppose in the vast majority of cases, it maybe doesn't matter that much. But they are drilling well, they are drilling holes into our aquifers. And so I would ask that as the committee goes on with its duties, that not only on this bill but on other bills, you will consider that northern Minnesota has a lot of drilling going on, and those holes can just sit there for 10 years. Maybe sometimes it matters, maybe sometimes it doesn't. But I think that should be one of the considerations we look at when we try to protect Minnesota's groundwater and surface water. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, sir. Any questions for the testifier? Thank you, sir. Anyone else who would like to testify on the bill? One question I do have, this gets to an issue that was raised by Representative Heintzman earlier about lead, is That is a concern, and I was wondering if you'd one of the things I'd be open to is doing an oral amendment to add lead as to one of the substances that should be added in. It's you know, this is one of those amendments where it's very simple, very short. I think you raised a valid concern there. Would you be interested in having that to help address your concern there, Mr. Heinzman, Representative Heinzman?
I would be interested, yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. At this point in time, I would like to make a oral amendment to Representative Brand's bill here, for 3950, and I'll need help from House Research here. Ms. Taylor, if you could help us with the proper wording to add lead into one of the requirements here.
Mr. Chair, members, what you could do is on line 1.16, after the first comma, insert lead, comma.
Okay. All right, I would like to make that as an oral amendment. Any discussion? Hearing, Ms. Taylor, if you'd like to read it one more time, and then I'll take the vote.
Sure. Be on line 1.16, after the first comma, insert lead, comma.
Okay. All in favor of the oral amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion carries. The bill as now has the oral amendment. Next step would be, is there any further comments? Hearing none, Representative Brand, would you like to make closing comments, please?
Absolutely. I understand, you know, we had Matt Spellman from the Minnesota Association of Realtors here, and I understand. It used to be that you could do a half a page of paper to get a house sold. Now, with all these disclosures, it's at least 19, 20 pages, somewhere in that avenue. We are adding more disclosures, and I think it's because we're trying to make consumers more protected. This doesn't get, he's right, this doesn't get at the people who choose to live in their home for 50 or 60 years. We do need to do more, and Representative Haley obviously pointed out, we do need to have some sort of a campaign that talks about when to get it tested and that sort of thing. This bill does not address that, but what it does is it clarifies, in my opinion, lines 47 to 65 in the well disclosure that we currently do have that that sellers have to provide information on. Instead of contaminated water, now we're spelling out arsenic, bacteria, lead, and that sort of information. And so I think that clarifies and provides a little less ambiguous language, which perhaps could avoid some lawsuits in the future as well. Also, if it saves a person from avoidable health care costs and that sort of thing because they purchased a home and didn't know what the water was like and didn't spend the $300 to $500 to get the under the sink technology to help purify that stuff, you know, I think that that's part of the reason why we should do something like that today. We still do need to do more because we do know the Department of Health has said that 10% of people who drink water out of a well right now are drinking water out of a well with higher than healthy levels of nitrates. There's no doubt about that. Well, we could talk about arsenic. We could talk about bacteria in some fashion, and we can talk about lead now, too. And so I'm hopeful that this bill will go to the governor's desk at some point and be signed into law, and we can get a little bit more consumer protection around home selling. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brand. I will renew my motion that House File 3950, as amended, be recommended to be re-referred to the Commerce Committee. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brand. Representative Brand. Next on the agenda, we have House File 3423, Representative Sandell. If you'd like to move forward. This is for the water quality standards for, PFAS and PFOS substances funding provided rulemaking authorized money appropriated.
Oh, come on.
I can't say those other two words without slaughtering them. Representative Sandell, do you move that House File 3423 be recommended to be re-referred to Government Operations?
I do, Mr. Chair. Thank you. But okay. There is an amendment. Should that come first?
Yes, Representative Sandell moves the A2 amendment. I believe this is to get the bill in your and the shape you'd like, but if you'd like to briefly explain it, please.
Yes, it identifies the result of a research on a fiscal note, and the fiscal note told us that this action would be estimated at $492,000. In addition, on page one, it adds that Minnesota statutes section 14.125 did not apply, which reduces some of the requirements of rulemaking.
Okay. Any questions for the author on the amendment? Hearing none, all in favor of the A2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative Sandell, if you'd like to present your bill as amended, please.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, members, and ladies and gentlemen. Thanks very much for the chance to talk with you today about the need to study and set standards for the health of our water. I think we all agree that taking clean water for granted is no longer acceptable policy. We haven't always been as attentive to this resource as we should have been, and we all, to some extent, share that responsibility. The fact is that our sky blue waters now require both assessment and protection. In many cases, local governments, state, and federal agencies are doing good work, but it's hard to keep ahead of the game. The Minnesota Water Sustainability Framework, published with support from the Legacy Amendment in 2011, refers to contaminants of emerging concern. Its chapters describing the challenges we face and the strategies we might take to achieve a desired Minnesota future did not mention PFAS or PFOS by name. That's not a criticism of the publication. It is evidence of how fast science and public perception can change, and that our vigilance should be reinforced to protect those who will live with some of the mistakes that we've made in the past. We don't have to go beyond the morning's headlines to realize the impact of a threat to public health. Last week, my wife attended one of the PCA information sessions in Woodbury describing the progress being made in the 3M settlement. She sat next to a young woman in the context of their conversation. My wife asked her if she had children. No, the woman said. And now we don't know what to do. Do we move because of the water? And if that's what we choose to do, we're afraid that our house will have lost much of its value. Now, I don't believe that public policy should be made in response to an anecdote, but that conversation suggests that there's not only serious scientific, economic, and political dimensions of this issue, but the emotional response to threatened water is deep and growing. I want to believe that the environmental engineers where I live in Woodbury, when they tell me that according to current prescriptions, the drinking water delivered to our city's residents is safe. But it's also true that 7 of our 19 wells have been shut down, and in Bemidji and areas around Duluth, the situation is seriously evident. PFOS and PFAS are highly persistent, mobile, and toxic chemicals. I want to say, Mr. Chair, that I rehearsed several times trying to say the name of those chemicals, but I decided rather than embarrass myself, I would try to do it by by initial. But they are serious issues, and they're used in they're highly persistent and mobile and toxic chemicals. They're used in food packaging to make sure that furniture and carpets and clothing may be stain-proof. They're used in firefighting foams and in many industrial sources, and in fact, they are worldwide. Exposure has been associated with liver damage, with harm to the immune system, to developmental toxicity and cancer. Studies have found that PFAS may affect child development, the ability of a woman to become pregnant, and to interfere with the body's natural hormones. Even though these compounds have long been known to be harmful pollutants, neither state nor federal regulators have set uniform safety standards for human emotion, for human exposure. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency recommends that states and municipalities set a threshold of 70 parts per trillion for PFOS and PFOA. Many scientists believe that chemicals can be dangerous in much lower concentration. The Minnesota Department of Health has set some health-based advisory values or guidance values for PFOA and PFOS, but they don't carry the same weight as health standards or drinking water standards or water quality standards, and water quality standards set a mandatory limit. In federal legislation, a sweeping PFAS bill passed the U.S. House but likely will die in the Senate. The House-approved bill would make the EPA declare PFOA and PFOS hazardous substances. Those measures could force manufacturers and users to help pay for the cleanup under the Superfund law. The bill would also require the EPA to set and enforce maximum limit to PFOA and PFOS allowed in drinking water. Currently, no mandatory limit on these chemicals exists. In Minnesota, the PMPCA sets water quality standards. And those standards are fundamental regulatory and policy foundations to preserve and restore the quality of all waters of the state of Minnesota. Minnesota shouldn't wait for the federal government to try to lead us. My intention is not to point figures or to blame individuals or corporations or other agencies for doing something that did not seem to be against the law. House File 3423 just says, let's figure out what we can do or what we can't do and live with that. That, it seems to me, is both common sense and responsible. The science of detection has become more sophisticated and our understanding of these chemicals much more detailed. New technology and new knowledge will support efforts that this bill suggests. Some say that the health standards suggested by this legislation will be impossible to meet, and that whatever those standards turn out to be, they'll be prohibitively expensive due to the problems that wastewater treatment causes. You'll bankrupt every city in the state, they told me. Well, my response is, let's find out what those standards are before saying they're ill-conceived or too onerous. Then let's see how that information might change the way we're protecting and cleaning our water. Opponents to 3423 suggest that House File 3638 is an alternative. That bill does little to assess or protect anything. It establishes a process by which we might observe the pollutants we already know have become ubiquitous and dangerous. The habit of saying we need to take more time to go upstream to learn where these pollutants are coming from and then talk about it is just a detour we don't have time to take. This bill is a responsible and reasonable approach to discovering the things we don't know and maybe didn't want to know. That time has passed. Now we have an opportunity to do something about it. I'm not foolish enough to say that there's no room for discussion on this issue or that there's not more to learn. I believe we need to work with the cities and other interests and with each other to address the issues of origin, capacities of landfill, the extent of liability that cities or others could face in light of our discoveries, and of course, our own habits. House File 3423 provides a one-time appropriation of $492,000 in fiscal year 2021 from the Clean Water Fund to the Pollution Control Agency and is available until June 30th, 2023. I urge you to vote for this bill, to enter into a serious discussion about all we can do to protect the interests of families and meet a challenge to public health. We are all on the side of the families and the individuals we represent. No one among us, I believe, want to see this issue persist without sincere effort to pursue solutions, to support both political and scientific efforts to mitigate the problems others may have left behind. Your vote will send this bill on, perhaps to the floor of the House, where the wisdom of your experience and knowledge will benefit the people of the state and beyond. On this one, everybody, vote green.
Thank you, Representative Sandell. Questions, Representative Heintzman.
I have a number of questions, and I think that I saw the commissioner at MPCA walk into the room, so maybe the commissioner could make her way down if possible.
Are you liking her, the commissioner down now for some of your questions?
At some point.
Okay.
The first thing I was going to quickly ask, Mr. Chair, I think 3638 is your bill. I don't know if that was mentioned in terms of a positive or a negative representative.
Representative Sandell.
Representative Fisher and Representative Heisman, I appreciate the scrutiny that you've given my testimony. I do believe, however, that 3423 is more aggressive, and I want to criticize no other representative's effort but be cooperative.
Okay. Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move on to the more serious
Thank
questions.
You.
Representative Sandell, we've talked a lot about this bill already offline, and I don't necessarily not support it, but I do have some questions, and that's part of the reason that I wanted MPCA to come down, because there is a lot going on right now, and we're talking about setting standards and trying to figure out where PFAS is in PFOS. And I'm wondering if maybe MPCA could answer relative to what we're trying to accomplish in this bill in terms of we're adding money for this specific effort. And I'm wondering, isn't this something that we're already, I'm assuming, working on at MPCA? Why does it take extra money to do this? There's already, I'm hoping there would have been dollars available for this kind of work.
If you'd like to go ahead and introduce yourself, please.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Katrina Kessler, Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency for Water Quality. And to Representative Heintzman's question, there is a lot of work, as you know, going on related to PFAS right now. And the MPCA is working in collaboration with the Department of Health and the Department of Agriculture and the DNR to assess where the biggest gaps are with regards to our understanding of PFAS and then put plans together to fill those gaps. Certainly we recognize that wastewater is part of that story, as is compost and landfill leachate and minimization upstream with regards to consumer products, and just understanding, as the representative knows, the true ubiquitousness of this. And to that end, we are following the science closely related to PFAS and PFOA. We do have site-specific standards already in place for a handful of waters in the metro area. And in those locations, we have monitored and assessed them. And in a number of places, they are already exceeding those values that are established to protect fish and fish-eating populations. So those methods exist, and we just need to have the data across the state to apply them more broadly. So certainly to the point of the pace of the work, you know, more resources are always helpful to accelerate work, but we would have to prioritize where we are also doing efforts in relationship to this.
Representative Heintzman.
Commissioner, you actually hit on my next question, which was, is 2023 allowing enough time for this to happen? And I'm assuming that there's lots of work going on at universities around the nation and other private labs around the nation trying to figure out where these standards should be in regard to human health. Are we going to be rushing that, or is 2023 a reasonable amount of time? We do have a lot of questions, and it is an emerging area of science.
Assistant Commissioner Kessler.
Mr. Chair and Representative Heintzman, that date has been amended per the amendment offered earlier to reflect the amount of time it would take to actually adopt a new water quality standard, because that process, as you are familiar with, is very time intensive. Not only does it require a thorough vetting and peer review of science, but it requires a number of opportunities for the public to engage and to for the agency to receive comment and make changes. So this is the earliest that we think we could get that work done. I would just point out that this requires hand-in-hand work with the Department of Health, because we established water quality standards to protect recreation, swimming, fishing, and generally surface waters that are sources of drinking water for public water supplies. But the Department of Health establishes the standards that are needing to be met where public water supplies are discharging into distribution systems.
Okay. Representative Heintzman.
Thank you for the follow-up, Mr. Chair. I read the amendment, and where it inserts after 2023, line 1.3, and Minnesota statute section, and it goes through, does not apply. How would the agency interpret that?
Assistant Commissioner Kessler.
Mr. Chair and Representative Heintzman, my understanding of that, and I will have to get back to you specifically, is to make sure that we aren't hamstrung by a rulemaking process that might extend longer, given that there are uncertainties regarding public participation and peer review of science.
Representative Heintzman.
That's all my questions for now. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question has to do with the source of funds for this. Clean Water Fund is listed as a source of funds. And I guess my first question I would direct to Ms. Kessler, as far as how would the department normally fund this work?
Assistant Commissioner Kessler, please.
Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, The ongoing PFAS work at the agency is funded through a mixture of funds. Certainly some clean water funds come to the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency to study contaminants of emerging concern, and some of that work is currently being funded by that.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, we constantly get pressured. I don't sit on Clean Water Council anymore, but I did for a long time. There's constant pressure that from people that say they want the money to be used to actually clean up water rather than to spend more of those precious funds on testing and monitoring. And so I guess my follow-up would be to the author. Do you defend this use of the Clean Water Fund, or do you think it could be possibly sourced through the agency's normal
I apologize.
Representative Sandell.
Mr. Chair, I apologize. Representative Torkelson, could you say that again, please?
Do you support using if your bill uses clean water funds
yes.
to do this work? I believe some of this work is already a part of the PCA's ongoing budget, and perhaps another funding source might be more appropriate than using the clean water fund.
Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Torkelson, and Representative Torkelson. As we drafted the bill, there was a conversation about that, and our decision was that the Clean Water Fund would be an appropriate place, and that the fact that there was money available would make this possible. So that's the decision I made.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, it will be interesting to see what happens across the street as far as Clean Water Fund usage goes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome, Representative Torkelson. Is there any other questions for the Assistant Commissioner Kessler while we have her up here? Hearing none, thank you, Assistant Commissioner, for coming forward. Is there anyone else in the room who would like to testify for or against the bill? They would like to come down, introduce themselves, and who they're with. Go ahead, Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. Very much appreciate the time that the author has spent working on this with us and discussing city concerns with how this language works. And I just wanted to take a couple of minutes to go through what those concerns are because they are not addressed by the amendment. So let you know where we're at in those discussions. So I want to start by mentioning that, just so people are clear, cities spend hundreds of millions of dollars a year to treat water to make sure that it is safe, reliable, and affordable for the people who are served by their public water systems, and treat as very, very key to general city operations the public health and safety that water and drinking water systems in particular provide to their communities. We will continue to do that. Thing I would like to point out with this legislation is that it is not addressing drinking water standards. It is addressing water quality standards. Drinking water is done by the Department of Health. They have health risk values, health risk levels that they establish. They have health risk levels for the majority of the core PFASs that we are talking about right now, including PFOS and PFOA. One of those was recently updated, PFOA, and PFOS is currently being evaluated for being updated. So that work is ongoing, and that is what is used as the limits for drinking water that we should be aiming our drinking water systems to meet. Water quality standards are on effluent. So that's the water that comes out of systems. So that's on wastewater treatment from municipal and industrial systems. It's on stormwater discharges and anything else that includes an NPDES permit under the Federal Clean Water Act. So a very different thing. And a water quality standard for a discharge of effluent does not necessarily result in an improvement to drinking water and making it meet any particular standard. That's a separate standard. The concern that we have expressed is that by doing this as a water quality standard, we are immediately upon completion of a water quality standard of this type requiring that everyone who carries a discharge permit that to one, know if they are discharging this, and two, meet that standard. Earlier committee testimony that was heard in a different committee included testimony on PFASs that said while we can theoretically with most drinking water systems use advanced technology to remove a lot of these compounds, it's very expensive and it's entirely dependent on the fact that it's a certain size flow that those filtration systems can handle. Wastewater effluent is on a much larger scale and it is very different water. It includes organic things that are not in typical drinking water supplies. It includes a lot of other compounds that are not in drinking water supplies, and so would be extremely unlikely to be able to be served. And in fact, testimony was that we do not yet have technology we know can treat drinking water, wastewater effluent for these compounds the same way we can treat drinking water. So our concern is that by passing this and establishing this water quality standard before we have any identified technology to address it, we are setting ourselves up for having a standard that no one can meet, which both exposes all of our communities' systems to potential federal litigation and kind of serves no purpose because you're setting a standard that nobody can meet. So we would respectfully ask, Mr. Chair, that a different consideration be given, that we look at instead supporting the Minnesota Department of Health's efforts to develop these health risk levels for these compounds on an expedited manner, and that we look at other solutions for identifying the sources of these compounds and where we can most easily minimize those ending up in our treatment systems. City wastewater treatment, stormwater systems, landfills, all of these, none of these create these compounds. They are coming to us in other ways, and we need to look at what is a responsible way for all of us together to reduce the levels of these that are ending up getting into our water supplies. And by putting a standard only on wastewater treatment, we feel that that is definitely putting it at the last possible place, the most expensive possible place to address the problem, instead of talking about how can we help address that earlier in the process. So, Mr. Chair, I very much appreciate the time. I am happy to try and answer any questions, and thank you.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, if we were to move forward with standards, as you were just mentioning, the difficulty that that could create prior to developing the technology, what would be the impact to wastewater facilities around the state? Would they just, obviously they can't just stop operating. Would they be in a position where they'd have to pay fines, or what would you suspect would be sort of the impact?
Mr. Johnson.
So, Mr. Chair, Representative, it very much depends on what we are able to negotiate with the powers that be that run our permits, which in this case is the Pollution Control Agency. In a current case where we have the chloride standards, which cities cannot get salt out of water, if that was an easy thing to do, we wouldn't have many drinking water problems in this world. We are essentially having every city have to go in and get a variance that says they cannot meet this standard. That's what I would expect we would have to be asking for with this, is to say, great, we have a standard, none of us can meet it, we all need a variance to it. That takes time and money. There's currently a short-term window that the PCA is not asking for fees for applications for those type of variances, but that is not expected to be in the case in the future. So the current application fee just to ask for a variance is over $10,000 per city, and that only gets your application in. It doesn't count the staff time and engineering costs and expertise you would need to go in and argue for that case. So it could be very time-consuming and problematic for cities to do that.
Representative Heintzman. Okay. Any other questions for the testifier? Representative Sandell, do you have any comments?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. It's not a an exaggeration to say that our public health is a sensitive and dynamic issue, one we're all concerned with. The efforts of this bill, or the individuals who've been working at health or PCA or elsewhere to study and set standards and to protect our health, not only this generation but generations in the future, have been serious, and I want to support their efforts in the future. As I said in my testimony, I want this bill to be the best possible bill possible, and I'd like it to get to the floor. I think that the wisdom and the suggestions of everybody around this table and others in our body can help with that. So in that suggestion of broad discussion and cooperation, I hope that you'd endorse and vote for this bill. Thank you.
Representative Sandell renews his motion that House File 3423 as amended be recommended to be re-referred to the Government Operations Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion carries. House File 3423 is recommended to be re-referred as amended. And then next, I will be presenting a bill, a couple bills, and Representative Sandell will be taking over the chair here.
Chair Fisher, do you move that House File 3948 be recommended to be re-referred to the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Division?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would like to move my House File 3948 be re-referred to the Environment and Natural Resource Finance Division.
Representative Fisher, would you like to describe the bill to us? Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would appreciate doing that. Thank you for the opportunity to present yourself. I do have a bill before us that deals with stormwater retention and infiltration. It calls for a study to take a look at the impact of stormwater infiltration and retention in urban areas, and to take a look at what the impact would be on groundwater and surface water. We've noticed over the years that there's been more and more times where we're having more and more contaminants going through the system, and we're realizing now that our stormwater systems is very intricate, and many instances help with aquifer recharge. Sometimes it helps impact what happens downstream and other receiving waters. And we've not had a real good feeling what's happening in that area, what sometimes comes down. You know, we're seeing there have been instances where there's been E. coli breakouts. Sometimes is that coming through the stormwater system? It's kind of taking a look to see what's coming on to make sure that, particularly in areas where it's acting as recharge for the aquifer, we want to make sure that the water is going through as they leave and go into the underlying aquifer, that they're not bringing along additional chemicals that could cause harm to our society. There is a fiscal note on this that we received late, so as a result, I was not able to add it on as amendment. That fiscal note was for $562,000, and that would be something that we would take care of adding on when we get to our next committee stop. At this point in time, I will stop for any questions.
Questions among the members? Representative Heisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'm wondering, the general fund is referenced in the first line, just wanting to make sure that we don't miss out on another fund to potentially fund this.
And what we were looking at when we were first setting up is that we were trying to address the aspect that this was a study. And I've been sensitive to the concerns that people have brought up about the fact of using clean water dollars or some of those others for studies. And so as a result, I felt this was something that was more appropriate from the general fund at this point in time.
Other questions among the members? There's a testifier, Mr. Randy Nemprish, the Minnesota Stormwater Coalition. Mr. Nesper, please introduce yourself and go ahead with your testimony.
Certainly. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name's Randy Nieprash. I'm a licensed civil engineer. I am the staff for an organization called the Minnesota Cities Stormwater Coalition. It's approximately 130 cities in the state that are permitted under the MS4 Stormwater Permitting Program administered by the Pollution Control Agency. MS4 in this case stands for Municipal Separate Storm Sewer Systems. We are directly affiliated with the League of Minnesota Cities, though I do not speak for the League. We appreciate the invitation and the opportunity to speak before the division. We wish to express our support for this bill. We believe that it is very important to have more additional, better information about the safety and effectiveness of stormwater management practices that are still relatively new, especially infiltration practices and their possible impacts on groundwater. It's important to us that you folks understand the scale of the implementation of these practices. Rain gardens, for instance, are some of the most common types of these practices. We don't have hard numbers on how many of these are already implemented around the state, but it's worth noting that just a single city, Maplewood, has more than 800 rain gardens already. Just takes a little bit of math to realize that we're talking about tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of these practices that are already in place and going in quickly in larger numbers. The state, in this case, has a unique role and responsibility as well. The MS4 program is somewhat unique. Among other things, it turns cities into local, it requires that cities become local regulators, and then establishes parameters that those local regulations must follow. So that cities now are requiring private developers, public projects as well, to implement these practices to standards that are set by the state. In many cases, the cities, and actually thousands of cases, the cities become the proud owners and operators of these practices in the long term. Private development frequently puts these practices in place and then turns them over to the cities, which means that if these practices are not safe, this has the potential of becoming an amazing burden for cities throughout the state. We have two small requests for small modifications to the bill. We have enormous confidence in the capacity and professionalism of the PCA when it comes to stormwater research and policy guidance. There is, though, the PCA has an enormous investment on infiltration regulations. This work has a research and research synthesis component to it, and the cities will be more confident to see that work done by an organization such as the University of Minnesota instead of directly done by the PCA. Our last modification would be a suggestion that the PCA be instructed to include meaningful stakeholder engagement in the work to be done under this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Neepresh. Are there questions for Mr. Neepresh among the members? Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Neepresh, for being with us today. You know, we've seen issues with stormwater ponds already, of course, here in the state of Minnesota, with sediment that collects in those stormwater ponds being contaminated with a variety of things that comes off of the contributing watersheds, whether they be big, small, or somewhere in between. And this bill deals not only with stormwater retention ponds, but also infiltration areas. To your knowledge, has there been any research done on, you know, for instance, we have a pervious parking lot installation that eventually is probably going to collect some stuff that we are not too fond of.
Yes.
Has any research been done on what might be collecting and how we might deal with it in the future?
Yes, there is research that has been done. There is research that is ongoing. There will be a continuing need for research over time. Stormwater suffers by being what I refer to as not well behaved compared to a lot of other water systems that we have. The work is being done. We're always learning. We frequently learn that we need to learn more each time we do some of this research. So there is research to build on. There is a need for additional research, and that need has been recognized at every level from the local government through the state and up to the federal government as well.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Nepesh, for that. You know, it seems that perhaps we are focusing too late in the process, that perhaps focusing more on the contributing waters that are being collected in these various receptacles, whether they be a stormwater pond or the underneath the pervious parking surfaces, is really where the issues, potential pollution issues, are coming from. And we're kind of tending, in my mind anyway, tending to kind of ignore that. Any comments along those lines?
Mr. Nepesh.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the best and only response that comes to mind is in the world of stormwater, we've long abandoned the idea of finding a silver bullet. We are entirely focused on silver buckshot. We need to be doing all of the above when it comes to stormwater. It's still relatively new. We still have a long ways to go in terms of what we need to understand. Every time we turn around, we find that we need to be asking more questions and certainly not fewer questions, and we need to be looking at all of the above rather than focusing on specific subsectors.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Nepesh. Hopefully silver doesn't become one of our
indeed.
Pollutant issues.
Still has its antimicrobial quality that seems to work for various items of clothing.
Thank you, Mr. Nepesh. Any other questions from the members? Hearing none, Mr. Nepesh, thank you very much. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify for or against this bill? Is he coming down? Chair Fisher, any closing comments?
No, just that this is a great bill. I encourage you to vote yes.
Chair Fisher renews his motion that Bill 3948 be recommended to be re-referred to the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Division. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the motion prevails. Representative Fisher, you have another bill, House File 3952, that you'd like to present.
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. I'd like to present House File number 3952, and I'd like to move to have it re-referred to the Committee, the Division on Health and Human Services Finance Division.
Thank you, Chair Fisher. Would you like to describe your bill, please?
Yes, I would. Thank you for the opportunity, Mr. Chair, Committee. Bill 3952 is kind of a straightforward bill that builds off of some of the presentations that we've had in our committee on bacteria. As we've noted and heard in earlier committees meetings, that we've had an issue with beaches being closed down with bacteria contaminations, and this is one of the first steps to step up with what's happened with testing that can eventually start taking a look at the bigger problem that we have out there and trying to figure out how do we start working upstream of where some of these sources are coming from. But we want to make sure everybody is safe, make sure that when they're swimming out there, they know that they can do so with confidence. There is a fiscal note on this bill of $64,000 that will be from the general fund. This came to us late enough that I was not able to do an amendment on it. This will be something that will be amended at the next stop that we go to. Questions?
Are there any questions for Chair Fisher among the members? Are there any questions among the audience for or against this bill? Seeing none, Chair Fisher, do you have any closing comments or any additional comments you'd like to make?
This is another great bill. Vote yes for it, please.
Chair Fisher renews his motion that House File 3952 be recommended to be re-referred to the Health and Human Services Finance Division. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. And all those opposed? Motion passes.
Next on the agenda, we have House File 3971. Representative Torkelson, do you move that House File 3971 be recommended to be re-referred to Government Operations Committee?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Okay, certainly. Would you like to present your bill?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill does a number of things. First, it renames and reestablishes advisory council working with water and wastewater issues. The membership of that council is outlined in the bill. It would be an 11-member council. We have a number of testifiers, Mr. Chair, that would like to testify to this bill, so I'm not going to take much time with it right now. We do have some blanks in the bill as far as appropriations go, and we will, I would hope we would pass this bill out of committee today and take a look at those issues in the next stop. Mr. Chair, I'm going to conclude with that. We have a limited amount of time, and I do want to give the testifiers time to speak their piece.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Representative Torkelson. We'll go right to the testifiers then. We have Ms. Elizabeth Whiffle from the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. If you'd like to introduce yourself and start your testimony, please.
Thank you, Chair. This is Elizabeth Whiffle from the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. We are a membership organization of more than 100 cities located out the 7-county metro area. Our member cities operate the water supply systems and wastewater treatment facilities that would be represented on the advisory council. We support moving forward with the reestablishment of this advisory council. We believe that when the Department of Health and the MPCA work on regulations affecting wastewater and water supply systems and their operators, it is essential that actual operators be part of that conversation. Reestablishing the advisory council will bring back an important voice to the regulatory process, and we urge that you move forward with this proposal. In addition to the council, there are a number of suggested appropriations related to drinking water focused on accelerating and enhancing cost effectiveness plan reviews, facilitating adoption of innovative best management practices, and developing and maintaining asset management plans. Ensuring that our communities have clean and safe water is a top priority for all of our members. We support these efforts because better planning and better practices help ensure our water is safe, but at a lower cost. We hope similar efforts are made with respect to wastewater. Thank you.
Any questions for the testifier? Hearing none, thank you. Our next testifier that I have on the list is Dr. Lucia Levers from University of Minnesota Resource Center. I'd like to introduce yourself and start your testimony, please.
Hello, I'm Dr. Lucia Levers from the Water Resources Center at the University of Minnesota. I'm a research scientist there. And I was in charge of the cost and benefit analysis that was completed on behalf of the Minnesota Department of Health on lead in drinking water. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you all have.
Any questions for the testifier? Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I realize it's a little bit unusual that I be questioning my own testifier, but Ms. Levers and I have not had a chance to meet prior to this. It just didn't work out. I believe that Minnesota does a pretty good job with our wastewater and especially our drinking water protection in Minnesota. I think of the vast majority of Minnesotans drink safe water, and we do a lot to make sure that happens. I believe Ms. Levers is especially well-versed in lead in drinking water. Mm-hmm. And I would like her to describe for us how she sees the scope of this issue and how we might best deal with it in the future.
Thank you. Ms. Levers.
Sure.
Dr. Levers.
Yeah, thank you. Have to get that right, otherwise my mom gets mad, you know. So to the chair and representatives, lead in Minnesota drinking water usually comes from two sources. One is in the home, which is called premise plumbing, so like your fixtures and whatnot. And the other is from lead service lines, which are the pipes that lead from the home into the street. There are other sources of lead, lead paint, stuff in the soil, various other things. But because water is such a big concern, especially with recent events such as the things that happened in Flint, we looked a little bit more into this. It tends to be more of a problem in older homes. The ones built before 1927 are very likely to still have lead service lines. We estimate there are probably about 100,000 still left in the state of Minnesota. And there's probably about 675 or so thousand homes that still have lead premise plumbing. There's so many more that have premise plumbing because there was still a lot of lead and fixtures and stuff up until about 1986. So it's just a longer time span. So homes that have both are of a particular problem. We estimate that the cost to remove all of those, so the lead premise plumbing and the lead service lines, would be between $1.5 and $4 billion over 20 years. That's over 20 years. It sounds like a lot, but some other municipalities have done this, like Madison, Wisconsin, and Boston, Massachusetts. Now, those costs are to do both premise and lead service lines. So lead service lines in particular are cheaper because there's only 100,000 in Minnesota as opposed to more that have premise plumbing. And it works out to about $2,500 to $8,000 per lead service line. So that's how you end up with those pretty big numbers. However, the benefits are even more substantial, double essentially. So whereas the costs were $1.5 to $4 billion, the benefits would be $4 to $8.5 billion. And those are just the benefits that I calculated based on lost productivity. So lead is a potent neurotoxin, decreases your IQ, which means that it basically you end up making less money and you're less effective at your work. So those are just on wages and household work, that type of thing. So that doesn't account for any other type of issues that lead can cause, of which there is a tremendous amount.
Questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Tarkus.
A couple follow-ups.
Sure.
My apologies, Dr. Lieber, for not using your appropriate title. I'm not very good at that. We recall not too long ago the crisis in Flint, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Are we at risk in Minnesota of having a similar crisis here?
Dr. Lievers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. So that specific cause, no. We don't have the exact same situation that they had, which was very unique and involved a lot of certain infrastructure, certain type of water, and certain missteps. So that's highly unlikely that exact situation to happen in the state of Minnesota. However, we do have a substantial amount, as I mentioned, of homes that still have lead service lines and premise plumbing. So while we don't have the same situation as Flint, we do have a case where something like lead service lines, which are considered sort of public and private, can be contributing to lead poisoning. And this is particularly a problem in children under the age of six. So yes and no.
Representative
Tarkus. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Dr. Lievers. So do lead service lines automatically indicate that there is going to be a high level of lead in the drinking water in that home?
Yeah, so, Mr. Chair and Representatives. Right, so lead service lines, generally speaking, we think if there's premise plumbing that has lead in it and lead service lines, the lead service lines contribute maybe 50 to 75% of the lead in the drinking water. If there's no premise plumbing, they contribute virtually all of the lead in the drinking water in the home.
So, Dr. Lievers, that lead that you mentioned is present in the drinking water. Is it present at levels, at high levels or moderate or low? And I realize lead is really a risk no matter what the level is.
Right.
Dr. Lievers.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. So, yes, there is no safe level of lead. So any amount of lead is dangerous. And, again, this is particularly a problem for children under the age of six. And it is a very significant problem for any infants in the home that are consuming bottled milk. That's not the right word. Formula. You could tell I don't have children. Formula that's made with tap water. So, yes, there's no safe level of lead. All lead is bad, again, for children. So, I mean, we're okay in here, but possibly some other little niños at home would be a problem.
Representative Tarkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one final question before we move on. And I'm doing this not so much because I'm trying to educate everybody on lead, but because just educating us to the fact that there are lots of questions around water quality, mm-hmm. And we have experts in Minnesota that know a lot about it, and bringing them together in this sort of format might be very valuable. Finally, along this line of questioning, if you live in an older home that has either lead fittings or potentially a lead service line, what should you do?
Dr. Levers.
Mr. Chair and Representatives, that's an excellent question. There's a number of things that you can do. So the longer water sits in contact with fittings and pipes and stuff that have lead in them, the more of that substance it can absorb. So you can remove some of the lead by running your water for a bit of time before you actually drink it. It's better not to drink hot water directly out of the tap. Cold water is better. You can also use a filter. Those remove plenty of the lead as well. The problem with that question is that a lot of people don't know. So they don't know if they had lead service lines. They don't know what's in their premise plumbing. And that's a particular concern for renters who definitely don't have any idea what type of lead service lines or service lines that they have. There's also some concern that people may not understand the risks of the situation. So whether or not they're actually doing some of those remediation or type activities, we don't know if they're really doing those in the home or not.
Thank you, Dr. Levers.
Said it was my last question. I'm going to ask one more. Does anyone track how much progress we're making on removing lead supply lines from our statewide system?
Dr. Levers.
Mr. Chair and Representatives. So unfortunately, we don't have a statewide system to do that. So certain public water utilities have more information about what activities they've been doing. For instance, St. Paul has had a few different programs in the past. For instance, they offered some lower rates to remove lead service lines if homeowners wish to do that while their streets were being repaved, that type of thing. So they have some data on that. But we at the state level don't really know if other public water utilities have had programs in place to kind of do this. But as far as a system-wide program, we haven't had anything in the state yet.
Thank you, Dr. Levers. I appreciate your testimony. But Mr. Chair, again, we've just explored kind of one aspect of drinking water. There are many other drinking water and wastewater issues that need attention, demand our attention. We do have experts in the state. As I said earlier, I think we do a pretty good job of protecting our citizens already. I wish we had time to hear from the Department of Health and others within state agencies that do work on this all the time. The University of Minnesota, through their MNTAP program, helps communities all across the state maintain their both drinking water and wastewater systems and make them as efficient as possible. All this is good work. There's always more to be done, and I hope that you understand that the members of the committee understand the value of this particular piece of legislation. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. Any further questions from the committee? Was there anyone else left in the audience who would like to testify for or against the bill? Hearing none, Representative Torkelson renews his motion that House File 3971 be recommended to be re-referred to the Government Operations Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. That was our final bill for the day. I declare us adjourned at 2:15. Thank you.